Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to protecting, educating, and promoting Florida's hospitality industry. Over 10,000 members providing 1.4 million jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. And from Florida Wildlife Federation, a private nonprofit conservation organization working on behalf of Florida's fish, wildlife, and their habitats, as well as outdoor education and sustainable nature-based recreation. Florida Wildlife Federation, since 1936, fwfonline.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The scourge of opioid addiction and death hits Florida with a vengeance, and the search for an effective legislative fix is on.
People are dying. We have a responsibility to act. Act now.
Also tonight, state lawmakers tackle their own version of Medicaid reform, much to the distress of health advocates and other critics.
They're playing with fire, and, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people are going to get burnt.
We'll also get updates on red light cameras, beach protection, and a host of gun-related bills that are working their way through the legislative process. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's day four of week three in this 2017 Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. The abuse of both prescription and illegal opioids are driving a national spike in overdose deaths. According to the Centers for Disease Control, these substances were involved in more than 33,000 deaths across the country in 2015. Florida has seen a dramatic increase in opioid-driven overdoses, up more than 20%. Now, as Lynn Hatter reports, state lawmakers are grappling with how to stop the tragedy.
Between 2014 and 2015, the Centers for Disease Control reports opioid-related overdose deaths jumped 22%. The culprits? Drugs like heroin, fentanyl, and oxycodone. Some are legal painkillers prescribed by doctors. Others, like heroin, are deadly and illegal.
Drug overdose is an epidemic, and we are in a crisis.
EMTs and paramedics would be the latest group required to report overdoses under Representative David Rommel's bill. That information would be forwarded to the Florida Department of Health and compiled in a quarterly report. The purpose is to create a central database that tracks where and when overdoses are occurring. Rommel says his measure will help state and local governments and healthcare organizations come up with both short-term and long-term strategies.
People are dying. We have a responsibility to act. Act now.
He's not the only one trying to find new ways to stop or slow drug abuse deaths. Fort Pierce Democrat Larry Lee wants hospitals to develop policies aimed at reducing readmissions for unintentional overdoses by connecting their patients to substance abuse treatment programs. Representative Kerry Pigman thinks it's a good idea. He's an emergency room physician.
This is an attempt to kind of change the course of the ship in response to how we respond to the opiate crisis, opiate overdose crisis.
Meanwhile, Representative Nicholas Duran wants to shorten the length of time pharmacists and other dispensers have to report the dispensing of opioids to the drug monitoring database. The state created the system in 2009 at the height of the pill mill epidemic. The goal is to crack down on doctor shopping. An amendment by Pigman would limit initial prescriptions for acute pain to 1 week, down from the 30-day supply some patients receive. Pigman says these prescriptions have often served as the gateway to addiction.
But 51% of people who ultimately get treatment, and that's just a small subset, started with a prescription for an acute pain syndrome.
As states have cracked down on prescription drug abuse, heroin and other illegal opioid abuses have increased. According to a state analysis in 2015, Florida ranked fourth in the nation with more than 3,200 deaths from opioid abuse. Heroin caused more than 730 of those deaths. Fentanyl caused 705. Oxycodone was responsible for 565 deaths, and hydrocodone caused 236. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Of course, this problem is much too big to cover in just one story. On tomorrow evening's Capitol Report, we'll take you directly to the front lines of Florida's escalating battle against prescription and illegal opioid abuse. We'll have a special report from member station WLRN in Miami on just what happens when someone overdoses on opioids, and we hope you can be with us for that during tomorrow night's Capitol Report. While the U.S. House of Representatives was voting down the Republican replacement for Obamacare today, the Florida legislature had health care reform on its mind, too. Florida is asking for extraordinary power to revamp its Medicaid program. It's prompting alarms from health advocacy organizations and policy analysts because it could cut off access to health care for millions of Floridians. Sarah Mueller reports they worry the process will exclude critical stakeholders.
Michael Daniels says he's been getting a flood of calls from Floridians with disabilities worried they'll lose their Medicaid coverage. Daniels is head of the Florida Alliance for Assistive Services and Technology Program, which is run by the state. He says the calls started right after the presidential election last year.
I've been working with people with disabilities for 32 years, and I've never seen anything like this. I get at least five calls a day, and I have been getting at least five calls a day since November the 10th. Of people very concerned, and then it escalated when the term Medicaid block grant was entered into the conversation.
Last week, Florida asked for major changes to its Medicaid program, including waiving federal regulations on medical care access. Experts fear it's a guise for more provider rate cuts and limiting program eligibility. That would mean increases in uncompensated care costs, which could leave some doctors and hospitals closing up shop. Justin Senior of the Florida Agency for Healthcare Administration wants the federal government to give the state a lump sum for some of its Florida Medicaid funding. Health policy analyst Ann Swerlick of the Florida Policy Institute says that may mean less government spending on charity care. Swerlick says hospitals already absorb billions of dollars providing health care for free. And Governor Rick Scott, who previously ran a for-profit hospital chain, proposed cutting supplemental payments to public hospitals in his budget proposal earlier this year.
Our current governor, you know, has some issues with some of the safety net hospitals. He seems to have a preference for the for-profit hospital world.
Less money would hit hospitals that serve large numbers of uninsured patients, like Florida Safety Net hospitals, particularly hard. The Safety Net Alliance of Florida declined a request for comment, and the Florida Hospital Association didn't respond. Mark Pafford, Florida House Minority Leader and current Florida Chain Board member, says providers in the state have a lot to lose if the changes are approved.
You're going to see people who leave the business, if you will, because that's what medical care is right now. It's a business. And you're going to see people walk away. And I think it's going to double down on more people without an ability to go to a doctor.
Wuerlich says she's concerned that the state wants to eliminate retroactive Medicaid coverage. That allows people who have a medical crisis to get help with medical costs up to 3 months before they applied for Medicaid. She says removing that will force families into financial debt and insecurity. Advocates like Swerlick are worried the state isn't being transparent about what changes it's seeking. Normally, when the state requests program changes, it works with stakeholders and allows for public comments. That hasn't happened. The Agency for Healthcare Administration refused to answer if it will consider public comment. The agency also declined to clarify or answer additional questions about the letter or its intent. Mark Pafford says rushing through backdoor decisions without consulting policy experts is not good governing and will hurt Floridians when the next Zika virus or other health crisis hits.
They're playing with fire, and, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people are going to get burnt.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Mueller.
Still to come on Capitol Report, several gun bills advance in the Florida legislature.
This bill is a license just about to carry. And if you have a concealed weapons permit, the penalty is de minimis. You just have to pay a fine if you happen to be caught carrying a gun openly.
Florida House lawmakers have voted to ban red light cameras, but some question the impact.
What was misleading is that there is a direct connection between red light cameras and accidents. I've not seen that direct connection.
A Senate panel advances two measures that could improve Florida's beaches, but retailers skeptical of plastic bag bans argue their current efforts are enough.
Providing receptacles to allow customers to bring back plastic, paper, and all different types of materials so that we can be part of the solution.
Florida lawmakers vote today to make it easier for big box stores to sell hard liquor alongside beer and wine, and that's making mom and pop stores nervous.
We're already having a very, very, very tough competition with them. I mean, the price at which they price their goods, it's close to impossible to even match that price or even come close to it.
And legislators take on the crisis of performance-enhancing drugs used by athletes who have four legs and a tail.
This is not trying to juice the dog. The training of the animal is what makes the animal win.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
Several NRA-backed bills are now headed to the floor of the Florida House. As Sasha Cordner reports, they include a bill making changes to Florida's Stand Your Ground law and another allowing guns on private school property.
Under current state law, guns on school campuses are not allowed. That also applies to religious institutions that have a private school attached. Law enforcement officers are the only exception to the no guns law, and Polk City Republican Representative Neil Cumby has a bill to change that.
This bill would allow the decision whether or not to allow concealed carry to be made by the private property owner, the property owners of the church slash school.
Gay Vellamont with Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America says this bill opens the door for guns on some school properties.
The bill as amended would specifically allow people to possess hidden loaded guns on private and college property where there's a place of worship located on the property, such as a chapel. This bill's practical application is so much broader than is being discussed. As a Florida mother, I oppose the efforts to allow more guns in our kids' schools. The focus on allowing guns on school grounds ignores the risk and consequences of a gun simply being present, and ignores the fact that this is not an effective way to reduce the risk of an active shooter incident.
But Eric Friday with Florida Carry disagrees.
This isn't about guns in schools. This isn't about college kids with guns. This isn't about any of those issues. This is about whether churches, private religious organizations, have a right to regulate the use of their property and who has the right to carry on their private property.
Cumby is also hoping to address what happens when a concealed weapons license holder accidentally and briefly displays a firearm in public. That bill would lower the penalties for such displays for first and second offenses. Supporters of the move call it a compromise to last year's measure to allow open carry in the state. Roy Blondo, a former federal and state prosecutor, is not so sure.
This bill just really allows open carry of guns without almost any penalties at all. Open carry of guns in Florida is a bad idea. Law enforcement, we don't want people carrying guns. People seem to glorify concealed weapons holders. There's hundreds of concealed weapon holders that possess a concealed weapon license who are felons. They slipped through the cracks.
But Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri with the Florida Sheriff's Association says that's not the case.
This is not an open carry bill. This is a bill that protects concealed carry permit holders. The law should never be a gotcha. It should never be a situation where somebody is trying to do what the law requires, trying to do the right thing, keeping their gun concealed as they should, and their jacket blows open, they're reaching up for the can of vegetables in the grocery store, or a whole myriad of circumstances where it's inadvertent.
Cumbie is also one of about 40 co-sponsors to a bill which has already passed the Florida Senate. The House bill by Palatka Republican Representative Bobby Payne would change the role of prosecutors during a pretrial immunity hearing for Stand Your Ground cases. Today, a person claiming self-defense must prove their claim to a judge to avoid a trial, but that burden would now shift to prosecutors during the preliminary hearing. But critics of the move say it will not only increase the number of Stand Your Ground cases, it will also place a huge budgetary burden on prosecutors. Still, with all three bills passing the House Judiciary Committee Thursday, they're now headed to the House floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kordner.
A bill to ban red light cameras passed the Florida House today. Regan McCarthy has more.
Unlike police officers, red light cameras can't use discretion. And for bill sponsor, Representative Brian Avila, that's a problem. He gives the example of a woman driving her neighbor to the emergency room. The city had installed a camera right near the entrance.
Seeing that she was in a situation that felt her life was in peril, She proceeds to tell her neighbor, listen, there's a red light camera here, but take all the precaution necessary not to get in an accident. But I need you to get me to the ER right now.
Avila says the neighbor paused, looked both ways, and continued through the red light. Later, the city sent her a ticket. Assuming officials would understand the circumstances, Avila says she appealed the citation.
The city of Tamarack says, we can't do anything. It's in state statute.
And because the woman appealed, the cost of the ticket went up from about $150 to more than $250. Avila says that story is proof. Cities aren't placing red light cameras in the interest of public safety. Instead, they're using them as a revenue source. Opponents of the cameras also say the devices tend to be tied to an increase in crashes, specifically rear-end crashes at intersections. But Orlando Republican Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith wonders if that data could be misinterpreted.
Do you think it's possible that the trend of the increase in accidents, which is a nationwide trend, that crashes are increasing, fatalities are increasing, is actually tied to the increased use of smartphones and texting while driving on the road?
Megan Sergine Samples from the Florida League of Cities says that could be the case. In fact, she says a second look at that same data actually indicates crashes are down, thanks to the cameras.
The only two types of crashes that can be directly attributable to the intersection light are both down at red light camera intersections. In the report, crashes that involve actually running the red light are down over 3%, and crashes involving pedestrians who use the crosswalk at intersections are down over 19%. Other crashes within the 250 feet radius are up, but vehicle crashes statewide are up 33% during the report's study period.
Sergine Samples says the state should let municipalities decide what steps to take to ensure their intersections are safe. Despite those concerns, the bill cleared its final vote in the House, but the road has been bumpier for the bill in the Senate, where the measure appears to be stalled in its first committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Lawmakers seem to agree Florida's coastline is a vital part of the state's economy, but Nick Evans reports one Senate panel highlights the lack of agreement on how to protect it.
Clearwater Republican Senator Jack Latvala wants to give beach projects a guaranteed stream of revenue. He argues Florida's coastline is key to tourism, and investing in it yields a return of 5-1.
However, we haven't addressed beaches in any way in over 5 years, and over half our beaches are considered eroded, and only half of those eroded beaches are part of Project Solutions.
The measure would make a number of changes to the Department of Environmental Protection's scoring criteria for projects.
Specifically, it requires consideration of economic benefits, federal and local matching funds, recreational benefits, project significance, readiness to proceed, habitat protection, and strategies to conserve sand resources.
Put simply, the changes place greater emphasis on dollars and cents. Regulators would begin considering a project's tourism-related return on investment. and questions of cost-effectiveness, federal matching dollars, and the value of upland property are all given higher priority. Riviera Beach Councilwoman Dawn Pardo says guaranteed funding and a three-year plan is a lifeline for many communities.
It is much needed. For too many years, the coastal cities throughout the state of Florida have been asking for a long-term comprehensive plan to manage our beaches. And this is finally a step in the right direction.
Latvala's proposal passed unanimously. Meanwhile, Democrat Jose Javier Rodriguez is pushing a bill allowing some local governments to regulate or ban plastic bags. State law currently preempts cities and counties from passing plastic bag ordinances. Here's David Connor from the Florida Surfrider Foundation.
We pull them from sand dunes, we untangle them from mangrove roots, and we fish them from storm drains. Our chapters collaborate with local governments to find solutions. We organize cleanups, promote ocean-friendly businesses, and support municipal efforts to establish local controls. But no matter how enthusiastic a city government is about protecting their beaches and waterways, the existing preemption leaves their hands tied.
The provision is a boon to retailers, and Samantha Padgett from the Florida Retail Federation argues state lawmakers don't need to do anything.
All those materials, whatever you use, they need to be disposed of properly, and the retailers have embraced their role in this, providing receptacles to allow customers to bring back plastic, paper, and all different types of materials so that we can be part of the solution.
But after a recent court ruling, the state's preemption is in limbo. Some lawmakers are hoping to seize the initiative. Rodriguez's bill would allow coastal communities with fewer than 100,000 people to establish a 2.5-year pilot program, placing restrictions on bags. Connor points out the bill would help the same beaches Latvala's measure would, but GOP support is scarce. The measure passed with one Republican supporter. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
The Florida Senate has approved a bill to tear down the wall between grocery stores and liquor stores, but the plan has independent retailers worried big box stores will flood the market. Kate Payne reports.
Ryan Patel manages an independent liquor store in Tallahassee. He says it's hard enough to compete with chain stores as is.
Well, to start with, we're already having a very, very, very tough competition with them. I mean, the price at which they price their goods, it's close to impossible to even match that price or even come close to it.
That competition could get even steeper. The Florida Senate has voted to tear down the liquor wall. It's a prohibition-era law that prevents grocery stores from selling whiskey next to the Wheaties, as the political slogan goes.
This is not a mandate, but they can if they want to. And what this bill does in its current form is that it gives those retailers 5 years in which to make that transition.
Miami Republican Senator Anna Terry Flores is behind the bill this year, and the debate is heated. Powerful special interests are taking strong stands. Publix, which has built separate stores under the current law, is one opponent, but Target and Walmart stand to gain from it. Clearwater Republican Senator Jack Latvala says this is a priority of corporate citizens, not voters.
I have never had in my 15 years of being up here, 15 sessions, never had a person call my office or contact me and said, we need to make the purchase of liquor more convenient for me.
And the opposition ramped up from there. Senator Daphne Campbell, a North Miami Beach Democrat, worries putting liquor in grocery stores will make it easier for minors to steal.
The voters stood for hours to put me in office. And I'm going to come here and vote it for a bill who's going to kill my own youngsters. How can I do this?
And bill sponsor Anna Terry Flores is quick to push back.
But I wanted to start on a light note, more so for the people who are watching, because you guys are probably up there saying, what in the world does this bill do? Does it kill children? No.
For the record, large-scale surveys show minors generally get alcohol from friends and family, not from stores.
10 years from now, this whole debate is probably moot.
Bradenton Republican Senator Bill Galvano sponsored the original bill in 2014. Back then, it was just a sentence long and wasn't the political street fight it is now. But today, Floridians can order alcohol on their smartphones. Galvano says a wall isn't the biggest threat.
I don't know how long retailers in the traditional sense are going to survive. We all see it in all our districts.
Back at the liquor store, Ryan Patel says the delivery apps are on his mind, but he thinks customer service will win out.
The whole process of shopping here is not just we're selling you a box, but we want to tell you why I'm selling you XYZ and not the other product. I mean, we want to even know what you like.
The Senate passed the bill 21-17. It now heads to the House. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally, tonight we started off this evening's program with a look at the very serious issue of drug abuse by people. But the Florida legislature is also considering the matter of performance-enhancing drugs used by racing greyhounds. We get that story from Ronald J. Eben.
The bill by Orlando Democrat Carlos Guillermo Smith, who says the dogs are routinely injected as a way to push their limits on the racetrack. And those injections have a negative impact on the dog's health, including virilization.
For those of you who don't know, virilization is the development of male characteristics in females. The anabolic steroids are also linked to kidney damage and liver damage, cartilage damage, gastrointestinal problems and shock. And for these reasons and many more, that's why the Association of Racing Commissioners International lists testosterone as a Class 3 prohibited substance.
Speaking in opposition to the steroid ban was Ramon Mori, representing the Florida Greyhound Association.
This is a birth control method. This is not trying to juice the dog. The training of the animal is what makes the animal win, and its bloodlines. And if we take away the ability to provide a birth control method to the trainers and to the folks that raise these animals, then we are going to have an overpopulation and unnecessary litters. And that is the reason why the Department of Business and Professional Regulation adopted rules allowing the use of low-dose testosterone.
Morey estimated that about 50% of the greyhounds are on steroids. Next, the bill goes to the House floor. There are fewer than 20 greyhound tracks left nationwide. 12 of them are in Florida. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ronald J. Eben.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank Ronald J. Eben and our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to protecting, educating, and promoting Florida's hospitality industry. Over 10,000 members providing 1.4 million jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. And from the Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition, protection, and stewardship of public and private conservation lands to protect Florida's waters, and to Everglades Restoration and Fish and Wildlife Conservation, the Florida Wildlife Federation, fwfonline.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.